Okay, I'm Samir once again. And today is going to be a message from our class. So this is like class continued, the sermon. It's connected to it. The name of the message is called Excuses or Performance. Excuses or Performance. So we were talking about a class. Remember that there's two kinds of people in the world. There's proactive people who get things done. They always find a way through trials and setbacks. Then there are reactive people who get little done. They don't have good discipline in their lives, and they simply make excuses. They blame others for their lack of drive and perseverance. So what I'm going to do today, though, is we're going to do it from a biblical standpoint. You know, show and tell is always the best way to understand, right? So we're going to go through today different biblical characters, and we're going to see biblical characters that were reactive, and we're going to see biblical characters that were proactive, and we'll see some that actually started out one way and turned to another way that will maybe give us a better perspective of our calling and our job. So we're going to start in Exodus 4. Exodus 4, starting in verse 1, this is with Moses when he's coming before Yahweh at Mount Sinai. And he says, and Moses answered and said, and behold, they will not believe me and will not listen to my voice, for they will say, Yahweh has not appeared to you. So is he being proactive or is he being reactive, right? Yahweh's telling him to go and do something, and he's making excuses why he can't. And Yahweh said to him, what is this in your hand? And he said, a staff. And he said, throw it to the ground, and he threw it to the ground. And it became a hissing creature, and Moses fled from its face. And Yahweh said to Moses, reach out your hand and take it by the tail, and send out his hand and caught it, and it became a staff in his palm. So that they may believe that Yahweh, the Elohim of your fathers, has appeared to you, the Elohim of Abraham, the Elohim of Isaac, and the Elohim of Jacob. Drop down to verse 10. You know, was that enough to prove to him, to change him? And Moses said to Yahweh, O Yahweh, I am not a man of words, either from yesterday or the third day, nor since you have been speaking to your bond slave. For I am heavy of mouth and heavy of tongue. And Yahweh said to him, who has made man's mouth? Or who makes the dumb or the deaf or the seeing or the blind? Is it not I, Yahweh? And now go, and I will be with your mouth, and I will teach you what you shall speak. And he said, O Yahweh, please send by the hand of him whom you will send. And the anger of Yahweh glowed against Moses. And he said, do I not know your brother Aaron the Levite, that he can speak well? And behold, he is coming out to meet you, and he will see you and be glad in his heart. So, well, here we're seeing firsthand, right? Yahweh is not very happy with people that are reactive. You know, he's happy with proactive people. That's what he's looking for, right? In his kingdom, everything will be proactive. So he's not looking for people that are going to make excuses, and especially for people to say, take him, not me, right? If we go to Samuel, let's see another example here. 1 Samuel 15. Because part of being proactive is following instructions. Obedience is proactive, right? Yahweh gives his commands, and we follow. That's being proactive. Part of being reactive is Yahweh gives his command, we do something different, and then we justify ourselves that we're doing the right thing. And I was just talking to someone this morning and saying about this, that in the past I've met some people that you'll meet them, and you know they'll be very, very kind, and they'll be very giving, and sometimes they'd say, you know, they'll even pay for the whole group for breakfast, or they'll have all kinds of gifts, and they're giving out, and they'll seem like, oh, brother, so-and-so is such a nice person. And then you find out later, he's living in adultery. But he's saying, but Yahweh's going to, he don't mind that, he, you know, because this is just my weakness. He don't mind that because I'm doing all these other good things, right? What does it say in 1 Corinthians 13? If I give my life out and give all to the poor and do all these things, but I have not love, it's like nothing. And the same with obedience. You know, that we can't be living in disobedience to Yahweh or in a sin and think that we can compensate that. Because that is salvation by works, right? That is that, okay, I'm doing this bad, but I'm doing more good, and I'm earning my salvation. That's not the reason we're being obedient. We're being obedient because we believe in the word of Yahweh, and we believe it's the right thing to do. We're not doing it to earn anything. We're doing it because it's the will of Yahweh. So this is all part of being proactive or being reactive. And that's where it can be deceptive, that someone can be thinking they're being proactive, but they're doing their own will. They're doing it their own way. So let's see an example here, 1 Samuel 15. And Samuel says to Saul, Yahweh sent me to anoint you king over his people, over Israel. And now listen to the voice of the words of Yahweh. And so says Yahweh of hosts, I will visit Amalek with what he did to Israel, how he set himself against him in the way when he came up from Egypt. Now go, and you shall strike Amalek, and destroy all that he has, and you shall have no pity on him. And you shall put to death all, from man to woman, from little one to suckling, from ox to sheep, from camel to donkey. Pretty plenty, right? You go in and annihilate everything. Drop down to verse 7. And did this happen? And Saul struck Amalek from Havilah as you go to Shur, which is before Egypt. And he captured Agag, the king of Amalek, alive. But he exterminated all the people with the mouth of the sword. And Saul and the people had pity on Agag and on the best of the flock and the herd and the seconds and the lambs and all that was good, and were not willing to exterminate them. But they exterminated every despised and worthless thing. And the word of Yahweh was to Samuel, saying, I repent, I regret, right, that I made Saul reign as king, for he has turned back from following me, and he has not risen to my words. And Samuel was angry, and he cried to Yahweh all night. And Samuel rose early to meet Saul in the morning. And it was told to Samuel, saying, Saul has come to Carmel, and behold, he has set up a place for himself, and has gone around, and has passed over, and has gone down to Gilgal. And Samuel said to Saul, and Samuel came to Saul, and Saul said to him, Blessed are you of Yahweh, I have risen to do the word of Yahweh. And Samuel said to him, What is the noise of the flock in my ears, and the sound of the herd that I hear? Right? He's supposed to have killed all of them. And Saul said, They have brought them from Amalek, because the people had pity on the best of the flocks and on the herd in order to sacrifice to Yahweh, your Elohim. But the rest we've exterminated, right? So he's making excuses and blaming the people. He's not even taking responsibility that he did this, you know, but he's blaming the people. And Samuel said to Saul, Stop, and I will declare to you that which Yahweh has spoken to me tonight. And he said to him, Speak. And Samuel said, Were you not even you little in your own eyes before becoming leader of the tribes of Israel? And Yahweh anointed you as king over Israel. And Yahweh sent you on the way and said, Go and exterminate the sinners, Amalek, and fight against them until they finish them. Why did you not listen to the voice of Yahweh, but did fly upon the spoil and did the evil in the eyes of Yahweh? And Saul said to Samuel, I did obey the voice of Yahweh. And I went in the way that Yahweh sent me, and brought Agag, the king of Amalek, and I exterminated Amalek. And the people took from the spoil of the flock, and the first of the herd, and devoted through sacrifice to Yahweh the Elohim in Gilgal. And Samuel says, Does Yahweh delight in burnt offerings and sacrifices, as in obeying the voice of Yahweh? Behold, obeying is better than sacrifice. To give attention is better than the fat of rams. For rebellion is as the sin of divination, witchcraft, and stubbornness is both iniquity and idolatry. Because you have rejected the word of Yahweh, he has rejected you from being king. And you know, in our life, there's sometimes that Yahweh will give us something to do only to see if we'll be obedient. It's not maybe the most major thing in the world, or maybe even it could be something awkward, but sometimes he'll tell us something to do simply to see if we'll be obedient. And like he says here, very clearly, does he delight in burnt offerings and sacrifices as obeying in his voice? Obeying is better than sacrifice. To give attention is better than the fat of rams. So we can't think that, you know, we can live in a sin, you know, or be doing something that's against the will of Yahweh, but because we're doing these good works here, we're going to make up for it. That's like what Catholics believe. That's like penance, you know. You know, it doesn't work that way. Rebellion is the sin of witchcraft, and stubbornness is both iniquity and idolatry. And this is what it comes down to. If we're going to be proactive, proactive means we are only doing the will of Yahweh. We're not taking it into our own hands. We're not doing it our own way. Obedience is performance. Obedience is performance. Let's look at somebody else who actually was a good example, Genesis 12. Now, here we have to have a whole chapter, two chapters, right? When somebody is going against Yahweh's judicial order, doing it his own way. But you know, when there's obedience, sometimes it's pretty simple. And we'll read it here. Genesis 12, and this is with Father Abraham. And Yahweh had said to Abram, "Go out from your land and from your kindred and from your father's house to the land which I will show you. And I will make of you a great nation, and I will bless you and make your name great, and you will be a blessing. And I will bless those who bless you, and I will curse the one despising you. And in you all the families of the earth will be blessed." And Abram went out even as Yahweh had spoken to him. Right? He departs. He's 75 years old. So we don't see Abraham questioning. We don't see Abraham doing it his own way. We don't even see Abraham asking where he's going. It's just like, and he had a lot of things. It's just like, Abraham, get up and go. And it's like, okay, get all the people, let's get going. Wow. You know, it's amazing. I remember years ago when we were leaving Babylon, some of the brethren in our local congregation, they took months and months and months, and they were trying to plan out, if a nuclear war comes, how far will it go? And we have to get past that line, and we can't go here because the weather is above 86 degrees. And then, you know, they're trying to find the most perfect place on earth. And that's not about leaving Babylon. Leaving Babylon is about obedience, the same that everything is, right? It's obedience. Obedience is what Yahweh is looking for, not sacrifice. Obedience is performance. So he didn't ask how he would survive, how he would get food or shelter. He didn't even ask where he was going, because Yahweh said, "I will bless you," and that was enough for him. The same as with when Yahweh said, "Go and take your son and kill him," right? He didn't ask how you're going to raise him up. He didn't ask, "Well, didn't you promise me that you were going to get these things?" He never questioned. He just figured, okay, you want me to kill him? You're going to have to raise him up. And well, here goes the example, perfect as it went. So here we see a good one. Let's go to another one here. Bad one. In Genesis 3, and this is with Papa and Adam, Adam and Eve. The prototype to first humans, and unfortunately, they were meant to be proactive, but they were far from proactive. They were totally reactive. So, you know, a lot of times we think the environment, like we're living in this bad time now, and there's a lot of bad things in the environment. That is true. Your environment does affect you. But these are the first two people, right? They didn't, you know, they're the ones, the first ones in Eden, anyway. You know, there's other humans in other places, but they're the first ones in Eden. So you can't really blame their environment, you know? And you can't say, like, it was years and years and years of bad decision-making. But look at how reactive these people were. Genesis 3 and verse 9. And Yahweh Elohim called to the man, to Adam, and said to him, "Where are you?" This is after they sinned. And he said, "I have heard your sound in the garden, and I was afraid, for I am naked, and I hid myself." And he said, "Who told you that you were naked? Have you eaten of the tree that I commanded you not to eat?" And the man said, "The woman you gave to me, she has given to me of the tree, and I ate." Right? Wow. You know, now, they didn't know any better. They're the first ones, but they get today. Can you imagine a man getting in trouble and he's blaming his wife? You know, what a coward. But right away, blaming somebody else for what he did. And then what happens? Then Elohim says to the woman, "What have you done?" And the woman said, "The serpent deceived me and I ate." So proactive people take responsibility for their actions, right? They repent, they make restitution where they have to, and they move on and they do better. Reactive people always want to blame somebody else. And here, look at this example here. What a horrible example they set. And this set the tone for the last 6,000 years. You know, and probably if it wasn't them, their child, you know, we look at Cain. The acorn doesn't fall far from the tree, like they said. You know, you wonder how the first son there is thinking of murdering his own brother, you know. So you know, child-rearing problems right from the beginning that we see. But we can't only blame Adam and Eve, because every one of us has walked in the same footsteps, right? We all have followed that way, you know? But neither Adam or Eve took responsibility for their sin, but they blamed their sin on somebody else. And this is what, like I said, Obedience is performance. This is where we have to have the character that when we do something wrong, we own up to it, and we change it. We make it better. Let's look at a good example now in Psalm 51. Because in Psalm 51, we see King David, right? Who is extremely proactive, but also human. And King David made a horrible mistake. A horrible mistake. But did he try to blame it on somebody else? Did he try to blame it on the weather? You know, he couldn't go out to fight. And if the weather was better, it wouldn't have happened. No, he didn't blame somebody else. He took responsibility. A Psalm of David, when Nathan the prophet came to him after he had gone into Bathsheba. Let your grace be to me, O Elohim, according to your loving kindness, according to the multitude of your tender mercies. Blot out my transgressions. Wash me completely from my iniquity and cleanse me from my sin. For I know my transgressions, and my sin is ever before me. Against you, you only, I have sinned and done evil in your eyes, that you might be justified in your speaking and be clear when you judge, right? Because every sin is ultimately against Yahweh, because he made the rules. So yes, we hurt people, and we do sin against people, but ultimately it's Yahweh that we're sinning against. Behold, I was brought forth in iniquity, and in sin my mother conceived me. Behold, you desire truth in the inward parts, and in the hidden parts you teach me wisdom. Purify me with hyssop, and I will be clean. Wash me, and I will be whiter than snow. Cause me to hear joy and gladness. The bones you have crushed will rejoice. Hide your face from my sins, and blot out all my iniquities. Create in me a clean heart, O Elohim, and renew a steadfast spirit within me. And that should be our prayer, every one of us. Create in me a clean heart, and renew a steadfast spirit. Do not cast me from your presence, and do not take your Holy Spirit from me. Restore to me the joy of your salvation, Yeshua, and uphold me with a willing spirit. Then I will teach transgressors their ways, and sinners will turn back to you. Deliver me from the guilt of shedding blood of Elohim, O Elohim of my salvation. My tongue shall sing aloud of your righteousness. O Yahweh, open my lips, and my mouth shall declare your praise. Wow. Wow. What an amazing psalm, you know, that we get from there. And David's heartfelt taking responsibility and being proactive, because that's what it's about. We're all humans. We're all going to make mistakes, some worse than others, right? But it's about taking responsibility for what we do, owning up to it, making restitution where we have to, and moving on from there, like he did. The next one is, to me, it's got to be one of the worst excuses I've ever heard in the Bible. It's such a bad excuse that it's almost comical. And it's in Exodus 32, verse 21, with the golden calf. Right? So here it is. I mean, all these people are being reactive there. Moses is going up with Joshua, Yehoshua up to the mountain, right? And Yahweh's giving him the commandments. And, you know, you would think somebody down there would have taken control and tried to stop it, but they didn't. And Aaron, who is the leader there, he's the priest, really should have never let even the pressure from the people take responsibility for making this cast and making the golden calf. So now when he's approached with it, what is his answer? Exodus 32:21. And Moses said to Aaron, what has this people done that you have made to come on them a great sin? And Aaron said, let not the anger of my Lord grow. You know the people that it is evil. And they said to me, make for us gods who may go before us. As for Moses, the man who caused us to go from the land of Egypt, we don't know what happened to him. And I said to them, whoever has gold, break it off. And they gave it to me, and I cast it in the fire, and this calf came out. Oh yeah, you know, we were just having a barbecue, you know, I'm throwing the coals in, and the next thing you know, this calf pops out. I mean, that has to be one of the worst excuses of somebody being reactive that I've ever heard, you know. And it's like, you think Moses is buying that? Yahweh certainly isn't, because he's up there and his anger's glowing already, and instead of Aaron just bowing down in sorrow and crying and asking for forgiveness, you know, he's just blaming the people. And all he did was throw this stuff in the fire, and this thing just popped out. You know, can't blame him too much for that, right? That's going to be one of the worst. But this is what reactive people do. Reactive people will make any excuse and blame anyone. If we go to Proverbs 26, I love the book of Proverbs not only because, like I said, it's the art of skillful living, and you memorize that, and it comes in your mind, it helps you to have wisdom in all situations, but also it's kind of comical. Like, when you read these things, you realize there's nothing new under the sun. You know, here's Solomon writing these things, and he's going through the same problems as we have today, and the analogies he puts in are really comical. Like, look at this. Proverbs 26:13, he's talking about a lazy one. You know, a lazy one says, a lion is in the way, a lion is between the streets. So here it is, you know, it's almost like Aaron, the same kind of thing. You're trying to get this guy to go out and do his work. You know, you got to go out in the field. Look, it's almost harvest time. You don't get out there and just, oh, I can't go out. There could be a lion in the street. There might be a lion out there that will kill me. And this is the same kind of excuses sometimes people make for ministry, right? What do they say? Oh, it's too dangerous to go over there. You know, I couldn't do that. Oh, I could. When we used to have a program where we were putting out flyers and information, this was many, many years ago, in diners and all this stuff. And, you know, anybody could do it. All you have to do is go to an owner of a diner and ask them, because when you walk into a diner, there's always things there, that so they let other people do it, and you put their tracks or whatever, and you have to hear the excuses sometimes people would say. Oh, I couldn't do that. You know, it might rain, or it's too far from my house, or, you know, he would never let me do that. Well, did you ever ask him? No, I didn't ask him yet. You know, just excuses, and here it is. The lazy one says a lion is in the way, a lion is between the streets. And then look at the next verse. As the door turns on its hinge, so is the lazy one in his bed. You know, what does someone do with his bed all day? They just keep turning and turning and turning. And here's Solomon, like a door and a hinge, you know. That really is like a lazy person, like a door and a hinge. Like I said, he the way that he put these analogies together, I chuckle because there's nothing new under the sun, right? That's the lazy person, you know. I know in my life, unless I, you know, there's times like we didn't get home from a trip till like 8 o'clock in the morning, and then we went to bed at 8 o'clock in the morning, and might wake up at 11 or something. But no matter what time I go to bed, I can't sleep past 7. You know, that's like if for some reason I go to bed at 3 in the morning, I'd be up at 7. You know, if I go to bed at 9 o'clock or 10 o'clock, I'm up at 5. But I don't know how people could sleep till 2, 3 in the afternoon. You just lost the whole day of your life. You know, you only have so many days. Think about if you live to 75 years old, times 365.25 times 75, and see how many days you have in your life. And every day you go to bed, mark one off. And that's if you're blessed to live to an average life. You could die tomorrow. But you only have so many days, and to spend it sleeping in a bed till 2 or 3 in the afternoon? Oof. You know, I mean, if you're sick, that's one thing, you know. But I'm talking about just in general. How can anybody do that? How can you do it? But like he says here, as the door on the hinge, so is the lazy one on his bed. The lazy one, the reactive person, is just making excuses. You know, they have no desire, they have no goals. And the key is, sometimes, like if you're in a corporation and you have a boss over you and you're making a lot of money, you know, there's motivation to be proactive, you know, because you could lose your job, you know, something isn't going to get done. But for us, doing the work of Yahweh, no, there's nobody over us. There's nobody watching. Nobody knows what time you're going to bed, what time you're waking up, how much you Bible study, how much you pray, how much private ministry you're doing for Yahweh. You know, this is something that takes faith, that you're only doing it because it's burning in your heart to please Yahweh. And if you're not doing it, you have to ask yourself why. Like I said, you know, Yahweh's ministry, there's one congregation, there's one body, right? So we have one ministry, one goal, but each of us are a part of that, and every one of us should have private ministry. All of us should be doing some kind of private ministry, you know, toward Yahweh for them. So reactive people are many times fearful and lazy. They'll make excuses to justify themselves. Luke 9, in verse 57, here we see Yeshua talking about the same exact thing. Luke 9, in verse 57. Luke 9, in verse 57. And it happened as they were going on the way, one said to him, to Yeshua, I will follow you wherever you may go, Master. And Yeshua said to him, the foxes have holes, and the birds of the heaven have nests, but the Son of Man has nowhere he may lay his head. And he said to another, follow me. But he said, Master, allow me to go first to bury my father. And it wasn't that the father just died. You know, because in the custom even today, you know, Jewish custom is when someone dies, you bury them quickly, you know, as quickly as possible. It's not like Egypt where they're, you know, doing all the things to the body and taking the blood out, and they're just basically taking someone. So usually you are buried the same day or the day after. He's saying like he has a father that's just maybe up there in age. And he's saying, well, when my father dies, maybe 10 years, 20 years, then I'll come follow you. So let me go first bury my father. What does Yeshua say to him? Leave the dead to bury their dead. But going out, you announce the kingdom of Yahweh. And this is a hard saying, because it's a commandment, right? Part of the commandment to honor your father and mother is making sure they have a proper burial. So I don't think Yeshua is trying to tell this man not to make sure his father has a proper burial. But he's saying, you can't wait 10 or 20 years for a relative to die until you're going to get to my work. Because if you're going to do that, look what he says next. But Yeshua said to leave the dead to bury their dead, but going out announce the kingdom of Yahweh. And another said, I will follow you, but first allow me to take leave of those of my house. And look what Yeshua says. Yeshua says to him, no man places his hand upon the handle of a plow and looks backward and is useful to the kingdom of Elohim. Why? Because if you're plowing, right, you know, with your ox, and you look back, what is going to happen? That ox is going to be everywhere. And when you plow, you have to plow straight in rows. Straight is the path. So he's saying, whoever puts his handle to the plow and looks backward, your life is going to be all over. You're not fit. You're not fit. You're not useful. You're not useful for the kingdom. You know, if it's today, I'm all excited. Oh, yeah, but tomorrow you're out here doing something else. And the next day, here. And your life is all over the place. And you're reactive. You have all these excuses. You know, well, I got parents, I got this, I got that. He says, you're not useful to the kingdom of Yahweh. He can't use you. You know? I mean, these are powerful words that he brings out that we really have to take to heart. Proactive people get things done. It's that simple. Let's look at Numbers 25. I really like this story, the Numbers 25. Not because somebody got murdered, but because it really teaches us an interesting principle about peace. Numbers 25. And we know the story, right? That Balaam wasn't allowed to curse Israel. Yahweh wouldn't allow them. So Balaam, who was cunning, you know, like the serpent, he is going to get Israel to curse themselves and how? Because he knows that, you know, men are men and women are women, so he gets the Israelite men to intermarry and interact with the women there of Baal Peor. And then we see what happens from there. What happens is there's such evil going on, because in some of these societies, in some of these religions, sexual practice was part of the religion, to the point where these people are before the tent of Yahweh actually having sexual relations right there. So I'm going to pick it up in verse 6. And behold, a man of the sons of Israel came and brought into his brothers a woman of Midian before the eyes of Moses and before the eyes of all the congregation of the sons of Israel, groaning at the door of the tent of meeting. Okay, so we know what's going on. And Phinehas, the son of Eleazar, the son of Aaron the priest, saw, and he rose from amidst the congregation and took a javelin in his hand. And he went in after the man of Israel into the tent room, and he pierced both of them through, right, with one spear, through both of the man and the woman, the man of Israel and the woman through her belly, so that the plague was saved from the sons of Israel. And those that died by the plague were 24,000 before this happened. And Yahweh spoke to Moses saying, right, so what do you think is going to happen, Phinehas? You know, you think he's going to get punished? You think, you know, life for eye, tooth for tooth, death for death, right? Life for life, you know, and for nothing else, even though he did something righteous, you know, do you really think his reward is going to be this? What is his reward? Let's see. And Phinehas, the son of Eleazar, the son of Aaron the priest, has turned my wrath away from the sons of Israel while he was zealous for my sake among them, so that I did not consume the sons of Israel in my jealousy. Therefore, say, behold, I give to him my covenant of peace. Wow, I would think a lot of things would be reward, but a covenant of peace for killing two people? And it shall be to him and his seed after him, the covenant of an everlasting priesthood, because he was zealous for Elohim and atoned for the sons of Israel. So, what does this show us? It shows us that Phinehas, by the act of saving lives, had a covenant of peace, right? So, what did he do? How did peace come? The same way it's going to come when Yeshua returns. Peace can only come by removing war, by removing murmur, by removing people who don't want peace. It's not just created out of a vacuum. And we have to realize that in our life sometimes, because you know what? Sometimes people think peace comes by appeasement. You know? So you're fighting and fighting. You know, I'm just going to go along, even though I know it's not right, to make peace. That's never going to make peace. It's never going to make peace. It may end one argument and make three other arguments to it. Peace comes by the absence of division. That's where peace comes. So the way that peace came was by getting rid of the division. And that's what happens when the kingdom comes. Yeshua doesn't come and turn the hearts of the people at his return. He comes at his return, and the ones that are against him, their eyeballs melt out of their sockets. So we have to think about this when we're doing. It's not our job to try to convince people that don't want peace to be different. You can't. And like I say, you can pray for people, you can be a good example to people, but people that have a different spirit, people that are reactive, you're never going to change them. Because they don't want to change themselves. You'll never change them. And people that are that way, you know, like Yeshua said, they're not useful for the kingdom. Let's look at what I believe is probably the most proactive person in the Bible. Let's go to Genesis 6, and except for Yeshua, of course. I'll get to him in a little bit. Yeshua, of course, was the most proactive. What I'm saying as a human being. Genesis 6. Because I think sometimes we overlook the task that Noah had. You know? Genesis 6 and verse 11. And the earth was corrupt before the Elohim, and the earth was filled with violence. And Elohim looked on the earth, and behold, it was corrupted. For all flesh had corrupted its way on the earth. And Elohim said to Noah, the end of all flesh has come before me, for the earth is filled with violence through them. And behold, I will destroy them along with the earth. Make an ark of cypress timbers for yourself. You will make rooms in the ark, and you will cover it with asphalt inside and out. And you shall make it this way. The length of the ark will be 300 cubits, its breadth 50 cubits, and its height 30 cubits. You shall make a window in the ark, and you shall finish it above to the cubit, and you shall set the door of the ark on its side. You shall make it with lower, second, and third stories. So, wow. Talk about getting things done. You're talking about a time before the Iron Age, right? You know, you're talking about a time where he didn't have any Black and Decker tools. And cypress wood is pretty heavy wood. And it took him 100 years. You know how tall this is? This is 450 feet, right? I don't know how many feet this room is right here. It might be around 100 maybe. I don't know, maybe a little more or whatever. But 450 feet by 75 feet wide, this might be 30 feet, you know, by 45 feet high, about a 10 or 12 story building. And he built it, right? In a time where you never even had a drop of rain. Wow. That's what I said. When you look around all the Bible, I don't know if there was anybody more proactive than Noah. I'm still amazed. And I've seen pictures where they believe is Noah's Ark up in Turkey. I've never been up there. We almost had a trip there several years back. But I would love to go up there because they still have remains of it up there. And one thing that's interesting is they do have rivets. However he did it, somehow he riveted it wasn't the Iron Age, they didn't have nails and all those things, but somehow he riveted it together. We do know tar and pitch. But can you imagine? Can you imagine that feat? To build that kind of structure with no power tools. I don't know what kind of tools he had. How did he cut the wood down? How did he sand it? How did he put it together? To make it to be that size, but it took him 100 years to do it. 450 feet long by 75 feet wide by 45 feet high. Can you imagine doing this with no metal, only torn pitch, no Black & Decker? And even he would have had to build scaffolds to get up there to do these. How did he carry those lumber? I know he had kids, you know, I'm sure they helped him. But wow, it's an amazing feat that Noah did. Talk about proactive, like I said. In a time where, beside the fact that it never rained once, so he in faith was also disbelieving what Yahweh said. Genesis 7, verse 1. And Yahweh said to Noah, "You and all your house come into the ark, for I have seen you righteous before me in this generation." And now you know why, right? You know why he was seen righteous. Noah was righteous and faithful, and he trusted the word of Yahweh fully. And he didn't make excuses. And if anyone could have made an excuse, it would have been him. How on earth am I going to do this? No, but he got the job done. He got it done. 2 Corinthians 11, in verse 23, we see in the New Testament another very proactive person, the Apostle Paul. 2 Corinthians 11, in verse 23. And again, under very tough circumstances, right? He's not one of the 12. He's looked at with skepticism because of his background. He's in Gentile areas, had a lot of things going wrong for him. But let's look at this. 2 Corinthians 11 in verse 23. He says, "Are they ministers of Messiah? I speak as a fool, I being beyond them. In labors more abundantly, in stripes beyond measure, in prisons much more, in danger of death many times. 5 times I received 40 stripes minus one from the Jews. 3 times I was beaten with rods. I was stoned once. I was shipwrecked 3 times. I have spent a night and a day in the sea in a shipwreck. I have been in travels often, in dangers of rivers, in dangers of robbers, in dangers of my own race, in dangers from the Gentiles, in dangers from the city, in dangers in the wilderness, in dangers in the sea, in dangers among false brothers, in hardship, in toil, in sleepless nights, in hunger and thirst, through much fasting and coldness and nakedness. Beside the things outside conspiring against me day by day, I also have the care of all the congregations. Who is sick and I do not feel the pain? Who is caused to stumble and does not have my heartfelt sympathy? It is right to boast. If it is right to boast, I will boast of the things of my suffering. The Elohim and Father of our Master Yeshua Messiah, who is blessed forever and ever, knows that I am not lying." Wow. So here's the Apostle Paul. I mean, he went through, you would think, this is the congregation over 1,000 years that this stuff, like Hebrews 11. And he went through all of these different things and was a performer even under the most dire circumstances. 2 Timothy 4 and verse 5. 2 Timothy 4 and verse 5. He says, "But you be clear-minded and all, suffer hardship, do the work of an evangelist, and fulfill your ministry. For I am ready to be sacrificed, and the time of my departure is at hand. I have fought the good fight. I have finished the course. I have kept the faith. For the rest, the crown of righteousness is laid up for me, which our Master, the righteous judge, will give to me in that day, and not only to me, but also to all those who love his appearance." I love that scripture because, wow, what great reward it is to be able to say that at the end of your life. You know, there's a lot of people who never come to faith, and on their deathbed, when they know they're going to die, you know, they ask for forgiveness, and that's great, you know. But they're doing it out of fear, because they know they're going to die, and they don't know if there's something else, and a lot of them just do it out of fear, and it's better to do it, not to do it. But here's somebody who's not asking forgiveness on their deathbed out of fear, who's there saying, "I'm ready to go. I fought the good fight, I did everything Yahweh asked me, and now I'm ready for that crown." What a great inspiration if when it comes to be our time, that's the way we could feel. That confidence in Yahweh, because we know we were proactive. We know we did everything that He asked us to do, and we know we overcame the way we had to. Yeshua, in John 5 and verse 30, he says, "I am not able to do anything of my desire. But as I hear, I judge, and my judgment is just, for I don't seek my will, rather the will of Him who sent me," right? There was never nobody more proactive than Yeshua. From the time of His birth to the time of His death, He followed everything You know, his food was through to do the will of Yahweh. John 17, in verse 1. Yeshua spoke these things and lifted his eyes to heaven and said, Father, the hour has come. Glorify your Son, that your Son may also glorify you. As you gave to him authority over all flesh, so that to all which you gave to him, he may give them everlasting life. And this is everlasting life, that you may know you, the Elohim of truth, and Yeshua Messiah, whom you've sent. I have glorified you on earth. I finished the work you gave me to do. I finished the work you gave me to do. Do each of us even know what that work is? That's got to be our goal. That's got to be our focus. We want to finish the work that Yahweh gave us to do. Like I said, you're one of the 30 million people sitting here. He didn't call us to be spectators. He called each of us for a reason. He's given us gifts, each of us, and they have to be used or they'll be taken away. It's that simple. Daniel 11, because, you know, we're talking about here, we're going into these tough times. We're going into a time where, you know, many will be martyred. We're not going to be able to buy and sell. But it's there to have us prepare. It's not there to scare us. Because look at what else happens during this time that we're living in. And even as the time gets worse to the people of Yahweh. Look at Daniel 11 and verse 32. Talking about the beast power. He will defile by flatteries those who do evil against the covenant. But the people who know their Elohim will be strong and will work. Right? They're going to be proactive all the way up. It inspires me to read the stories of Richard Wurmbrand in prison and how in prison he wasn't there being reactive and making excuses. And a lot of things he did actually caused his own, you know, his own environment because he openly went out there and openly went before, you know. But he knew that that was the will. He knew if he didn't do it, nobody would do it. But yet when he was in there, he didn't regret it. He was in that prison. He looked at it and said, you know what? I have a new parish here. I got a new congregation. And these people can't go out. They can't leave. So they got to listen to me. He looked at it as such a blessing of it. And this is what's going to happen to us. Verse 33. And those who understand among the people will instruct many. Yet they will stumble by the sword and by the flame, by exile and spoil for days. And when they shall stumble, they will be helped with a little help. But many will join them in hypocrisy, like we see even now, right? And many of those who understand shall stumble to refine and to purge them and to make white to the time of the end, for it is yet for the appointed time. So this is our destiny. If you're proactive, it doesn't matter what comes before you. You're going to know there's a work to be done. But the way you're going to get that work done is by preparation, like I said. You know, gold medals are not won at the Olympics. Gold medals are won in the training. Someone just doesn't come out of the stands and run, you know, a 5.5 minute mile. You train and train and train your whole life for that one moment when now it's ready to perform. And here we are, you know, whether you were called the first hour of the day, the fourth hour, the eighth hour, now the 11th hour, now it's the time to perform. But if you're not preparing yourself, if you're not building those spiritual gifts, if you're not doing your spiritual exercise and gaining strength and strongness of mind, overcoming your body, like we said, you'll never perform. You'll never perform. So this is what it's about. People in the end time will not make excuses, but they'll work. They'll perform. They'll bring sons to salvation. And like I said, we're a small congregation by comparison. But since COVID, in the last year and a half, we've done more in the last year and a half than maybe the 10 years before that. It's amazing how much that Yahweh is blessing us as a worldwide work in the midst of a pandemic when most people were locked down. We have virtually no money, you know, for trips and this kind of thing. We've baptized thousands of new people into the family of Yahweh in the last 2 years. We've started over now 25 communities. Actually, now it's closer to 30 that are getting started here, that are basically self-sufficient. We have the 25 Bible lessons to restore the original doctrines of the apostles from Jerusalem. We have millions of Bible downloads that have come. I can't tell you, I don't know the exact number, but I know even 6 or 7 years ago, it was already 4 or 5 million that we had. Millions of Bible downloads from the website. And we're part of that Eliyahu ministry, you know, turning the hearts of the fathers to the children and the children to the fathers. But our work is not done. Our work is only beginning. Our work is not done. Our work is only beginning. And our most important work is yet to come. Matthew 25, the parable of the 10 virgins. I'm going to read verse 1 through 4. That the kingdom of heaven shall be compared to 10 virgins who, taking their lamps, went out to a meeting of the bride and the bridegroom. 5 of them were wise, and 5 of them were foolish. What does that tell you? 5 were proactive, 5 were reactive. It comes down to everything in life. Then those foolish, the reactive ones, taking their lamps, they did not take oil with them. But the wise took oil in their vessels and their lamps. The proactive people are always preparing, right? The proactive people have a plan of action. The proactive people are looking. So the proactive one would never leave without oil because they know it, right? It's in their character. They're preparing for that very moment. And then the reactive person, what did they do? Did they take responsibility? No. They said to the proactive ones, give me your oil. We don't have any. What does he tell them? No, go buy. Go buy and sell. Go to this website. This guy's selling it for $49.99. And while they're going out to buy it, what happens? Yeshua comes and the door is locked. I can tell you right now, there will not be any reactive people in the kingdom. There will be proactive people. People there that have taken responsibility in their life and are overcoming. That's what Yeshua is looking for. With his help, of course. You know, that's the thing. We're not doing it on our own. Nobody is doing it in their own strength. We're all doing it through him. Luke 14 and verse 15. Because another thing that happens is reactive people never see real reality. Because they're always making excuses, they never see what's there before them. They never see the opportunity, right? And that's why I say, I don't like to say trials. I'm not having a trial. I'm having a challenge. Because a challenge is something that I can overcome. And it's something that gets me going because now I can work on something. It's something that I can do and help with the help of Yahweh, of course. But if the people are reactive, they can't see that. Because they're so worried making excuses and blaming somebody else that they don't see this opportunity that's right before them. And they miss opportunities because of that. Luke 14, verse 15. And one of those reclining with him, hearing these things, he said to him, blessed are those eating bread in the kingdom of Elohim. And he said to him, a certain man made a great supper and invited many. And he sent his slave to the supper hour to say to those who had been invited, come, for now all things are ready. And with one mind they began to make off, right? They're reactive. They have excuses. The first said, I have bought a field and I need to go out and see it. I ask you, please excuse me. And another said, I bought 5 yoke of oxen, I'm going to try them out. Please have me excused. And another said, I married a wife, and for this reason I'm not able to come. And having come up, that slave reported these things to the master. Then being angry, the housemaster said to his slave, go out quickly into the streets and the lanes of the city, and bring in here the poor, and the maimed, and the lame, and the blind ones. Right? This is where we're at. Many people that have been around, even going back to Church of God days from 30 years ago, they turned down the invitation. Some of them went right back to the world. And now we're at that 11th hour of the workers in the field. And Yahweh is telling, go to the highways and the byways and you bring in those people. Right? And the slave said, sir, it has been done and ordered. And still there is room. Right? Because there's always room in the kingdom. There's always room for one more. And the master said to the slave, go into the highways and hedges and compel them to come in so that my house may be filled. For I say to you, not one of those men who had been invited shall taste of my supper. They'll be weeping and gnashing of teeth. And people at that time, you know what? They're not going to be crying because they didn't fulfill their potential to Yahweh. They're going to be crying because they didn't get what they wanted in the end. It's just like a criminal, right? When he's before the judge there, you know, and he's reading that, I am so, sorry for what I did. He's not sorry for what he did. He's sorry that he got caught. Because if he didn't get caught, he'd still be out there doing the same thing. And we have to make these decisions because of our burning love for Yahweh and Yeshua, what they did in our life. And because that's what grace is about. It's about the ability to want to give back because we're so overwhelmed that Yahweh did so much for us that don't deserve it. And that's the point of it. But if we're making excuses and we're not preparing for the job, and now as we see this, like I said, no one knows the day or the hour, but now we've we pinpointed it down to at least less than 15 years and probably less than 10 years until Yeshua's feet are on that Mount of Olives. And maybe less than that. We don't know, as Yahweh puts the name. But now we know for sure as things are happening, we know it, that it can't even be 25 or 30 years. And now that's what he's doing. He's giving us these things for us to motivate us, you know, to encourage each other with these things as you see that day approaching. And now it's approaching. And this is the time to roll up our sleeves, and this is the time to work. Deuteronomy 34, because when I started with Moses, you know, who was actually a good person, but he was not proactive at that time, I want to show now how he did become proactive though. You know, he may not have wanted to go out and do the job initially, but once he took the job, he did it seriously from that point on. So let's go to Deuteronomy 34, verse 7. Then Moses was a son of 120 years at his death. His eye had not become dim, and his vigor did not flee him. And the sons of Israel mourned Moses in the plains of Moab 30 days, and the days of weeping and mourning for Moab were ended. And Joshua the son of Nun was full of the spirit of wisdom, for Moses had laid his hands on him. And the sons of Israel listened to him, and did as Yahweh commanded Moses. And never since has a prophet like Moses arisen in Israel, whom Yahweh knew face to face. Wow, did he become proactive? You better believe he did. In regard to all the signs and wonders which Yahweh sent him to do in the land of Egypt, to Pharaoh and all his servants in all the land, and in regard to the mighty hand and all the great terror which Moses showed in the sight of all Israel. Wow. So it's encouragement to see that Moses went from a reactive to a proactive. It's never too late. It's never too late. You know, so don't take that reactive excuse like, oh, it's too late. Oh, you won't forgive me. Oh, this now. That's just being more, just adding more reactiveness to being reactive. It's the fact that we can change through the Holy Spirit. We can change. John 15, verse 1 through 3. Because being a disciple, it's not hypothetical, but it's a reality, and Yahweh expects each disciple to bear fruit. John 15 and verse 1, I am the vine, the true vine, my Father is the vine dresser. Every branch in me not bearing fruit he takes away, and everyone bearing fruit he prunes, so that it may bear more fruit. You are already pruned, because the word which I have spoken to you. Drop down to verse 8. In this my Father is glorified, that you should bear much fruit, and you will be disciples to me. So that's our calling. Our calling is to bear fruit. Yahweh's kingdom is a kingdom of being proactive, which means every single person in that kingdom has a purpose. Like I said, nobody in the kingdom is in a victim mentality. You know, it's not about living that way. It's having purpose and having vision and helping others. That's Yahweh's economy. And this is what it's all about. Revelation 22 and verse 12. Yeshua says, behold, I'm coming soon. My reward is with me to give each according to his work. My reward is with me to give each according to his work. And we want to be like the Apostle Paul when that happens. We want to be there with arms open and thanking him and be ready to receive what he's ready to give us. Two more scriptures. Psalm 66. Psalm 66, starting verse 1. A psalm, make a joyful noise to Elohim, all the earth. Sing out the honor of his name. Give glory to his praise. Say to Elohim, how much to be feared are your works. Through the greatness of your power, your enemies pretend obedience to you. All the earth shall worship you, and they shall sing to you, they shall praise your name, Selah. Come and see Elohim's works, who is feared in his acts toward the sons of men. He turns the sea into dry land. They go through the river on foot. There we will rejoice with him. He rules by his power forever. His eyes search out the nations. Let not the rebels exalt themselves, Selah. Bless, O our Elohim, O peoples, and make heard the voice of his praise. Who holds our soul in life and does not allow our foot to slide. For you, O Elohim, have proved us. You have tested us as silver is refined. You have brought us into the net. You laid afflictions on our loins. You have let men ride at our head. We went through fire and through water, but you brought us out plenty. I will go into your house with burnt offerings. I will pay you my vows, which my lips have opened, and my mouth has spoken in my trouble. I will offer burnt sacrifices of fatlings to you with the incense of grams. I will offer bulls and goats, Selah. Come here and let me recount all you who fear Elohim, what he has done for my soul. I cried to him with my mouth, and exultations were under my tongue. If I had regarded iniquity in my heart, Yahweh would not have heard. Surely Elohim has heard. He has attended to the voice of my prayer. Blessed be Elohim, who has not turned away my prayer and his mercy from me. Wow, what a proactive prayer. What a proactive prayer we see here. That proactive people have humility and the fear of Yahweh and faith, and they trust Yahweh for all, giving the glory to him, not themselves. So like I said, it's nothing about ability. It's nothing about taking praise to ourselves, like the Apostle Paul said, where is the boasting? Because anything we do is only an ability Yahweh gave us. And that's the only way we can do it anyway. But it's a matter of having humility and fear of Yahweh and faith in giving him the glory for us. So the last scripture, I want to go over here, is one of, again, the good examples of being proactive. But I think it's one of the best examples for us here, and it's from the book of Esther. Because Esther was also a little bit like Moses. You know, she feared in the beginning, as we're going to see. She had a tough situation. She didn't realize that she really had the power that was given to her. But then we're going to see what happens when it's put before her. So we know the story, right? You know, Haman doesn't like Mordecai. He comes into the king. He wants to have Mordecai killed, but not only Mordecai, he wants to have every Jew wiped out. And we'll pick up the story in Esther 3 in verse 8. Esther 3 in verse 8. And Haman said to King Ahasuerus, there is a people scattered abroad, dispersed among the people in all the provinces of your kingdom, and their laws are different from every people, and they are not doing the king's laws. And it is not for the king's gain to let them alone. If it pleases the king, let it be written to destroy them. And I will pay 10,000 talents of silver to the hands of those who do the work to bring it into the king's treasuries. And the king took his ring from his hand and gave it to Haman, and the son of Hammedatha, the Agagite, the one distressing the Jews. And the king said to Haman, the silver is given to you, also the people, to do with them as it seems good to you. Then the king's scribes were called on the 13th day of the first month, and it was written according to all that Haman had commanded to the king's satraps, and to the governors who were over every province, and to the rulers of every people of every province according to its writing, and to every people according to their language. It was written in the name of King Ahasuerus and sealed with the king's ring. And the documents were sent by the runners into all the king's provinces to destroy, to kill, and to cause to perish all Jews, both young and old, little children and women, in one day, on the 13th of the 12th month, which is the month Adar, to take what they owned for a prize. A copy of the writing was given in law, and every province was published to all the people, to be ready for that day. And in that day, once the king signed it and sealed it, that was it. He couldn't even change his own law. We see that in the book of Daniel, right? So this is serious. Every Jew is going to be wiped out. So what happens? Mordecai hears about this in chapter 4 and verse 1. Mordecai understood all that was done, and Mordecai tore his clothes and put on sackcloth with ashes and went out into the middle of the city and cried with a loud and bitter cry. Can you imagine? You know, I mean, you're not just thinking of yourself, but you're thinking of your people. That means all the prophecies wouldn't come to pass. What's going to happen with all of this? And then let's drop down to verse 6, and let's see what happens. Because he sends Hatach to go to Esther and tell her this. And he went out from Mordecai to the city street in front of the king's gate. And Mordecai told him of all that had happened to him, and of the sum of the silver which Haman had sent away to the king's treasury for the Jews in order to destroy them. Also, he gave them a copy of the writing of the law, which was given at Shushan, in order to destroy them, to show it to Esther, and to reveal to her and to command her that she should go into the king to make supplication to him, to seek from him help for his people. We know what happened. Esther was a young girl. She happened to just be taken into the harem of the king. She's one of, you know, I don't know how many hundreds of wives the king might have. He did like her, but we know what the law is. If anyone comes into the king without being called, and he doesn't put out that scepter to her, it's death. So when he comes to Esther, and they told Mordecai's words to Esther, or let's go first with what Esther says, and Esther spoke to Hatat and ordered him to go back to Mordecai. For all the king's servants and the people of the king's province know that whoever, whether man or woman, shall come into the king in the inner court who is not called, there is one law of this to die, except such to whom the king shall hold out the golden scepter, so that they may live. But I have not been called to come into the king these 30 days. So think how she's feeling, you know, and just a young girl at the time, too. And they tell to Mordecai, and this is one of the most profound scriptures in all of scripture, what Mordecai says to her. Mordecai said to take back to Esther, do not imagine within yourself to deliver yourself to the king's house more than all the Jews. For if you were completely silent at this time, relief and deliverance will rise up to the Jews from another place, but you and your father's house shall perish. And who knows if you have been attained to the kingdom for such a time as this? Wow. Who knows if you've been attained to the kingdom for such a time as this? Every one of us didn't choose the parents that we were born, the area of the world we were born in. You know, we're here from, I think, 12 different countries. And we also didn't choose the time we were living in. You could have been born, you know, as one of the Church in the Wilderness in 1442. You could have been born in 1888, you know, in the Little House of the Prairie age. But each of us, as it says, Yahweh knew us before in our mother's womb. Each of us was selected, particularly by Yahweh, not just to be born in this time, but to be sitting in this room right now as his ambassadors, to be the first ones to teach in his kingdom. Think about that for a moment. Each of us was specifically picked. There's no mistakes, you know. There's no mistakes here. It's not like, oh, you know, it was a mistake. No. Yahweh picked each of us, where we were born, how we were born, and the time we were born in, for such a time as this. And everything that's going to happen from here, we know it. We know what's going to happen. We know some are going to glorify him through martyrism. We know that some aren't. We know that some are going to work. We know the exploits that are going to be done. We know it's going to get tough from here. But this is why, like I said, like Paul said, the runner in the race, this is the time to suck it up, to do the exercise, and to get ready. Because you've been born for such a time as this. We could be here 1,000 people and we're not. But you know we are. Each one of us is picked from our country as a representative. Can you imagine? You're one representative from your country here. That Yahweh is choosing you as the ambassador for that country to go back and bring this message back there for such a time as this. And like Mordecai said, don't think if you don't follow through that Yahweh is not going to get his will done by another means, because he will. But just like the parable of the virgins, what you are giving up, if you don't follow through, is just unbelievable. There's no accidents in Yahweh's kingdom. Each one of us was called for a purpose for such a time as this. We have to be proactive, because the proactive people are performing in faith before him. Sometimes we have to be proactive in the midst of dire circumstances. We know it, that may even risk our life. But each time we perform, we give glory to Yahweh. And like I said, we could have been born in any time. During the Inquisition, you could have been born, you know, in 222 BC. I used to, when I first became a believer, one of the things I used to like to do is, we'd always take a walk on Friday evening, and there was a cemetery near my house. It was an old cemetery, and some of these graves were there from the 1800s. And I'd look at the names, you know, John Barrett, 1824 to 18, and I would try to think, you know, of this man in 1860 with his plow, and how he's working and coming to, every one of those people, their lives, their stories, and each one was there, their bodies were in that grave right under me, and I'm thinking about this, you know? But everything they did, now they're just waiting for the resurrection. And like I said, in the Bible, as we're reading these people, we see good examples and we see bad examples. You see King Saul and you see King David. But you know the difference, the similarity between both of them? They both can't do anything more than what's written at this point. Whatever David did, whatever his reward is, he can't add to it because he's not here anymore. Whatever King Saul did to lose his reward, he can never get it back. But each of us has breath for one more day at least. And each of us is able to go that one more day and serve Yahweh and bear fruit like he says in John 15 to our account. And like I say, how do you know that you weren't born for such a time as this? You were born now in the end time during the days to do a work for Yahweh and bringing the good news all over the earth. The apostles lived in that time where they laid the seeds for that work, and we live in that time where we do the harvest of that work, bringing in the sheaves, right? You are here, and the greatest work is still before us. And how do you know if it's for such a time as this? Yahweh bless.